26. You can tell it's Monday by the way I hit this. Representative Alan Brown, can you have someone with you if you'd like to come forward? I'll let you explain about your bill. Good afternoon and welcome.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and Committee. For the record, I'm State Representative Alan Brown from House District 10. I'm here today to support in support of House Bill 2296. During the past numerous special sessions we had, I believe I introduced a very similar bill each and every time, and it never seemed to make it all the way through the process, so I'm here for one more try. This is actually a bill that was introduced on as a committee bill from the Jobs and Economy Task Force from last summer. Enterprise zones can be a very good and necessary tool in economic development and job creation. The revenue impact is based upon new construction, and you're not giving up something you don't have. You're only giving up revenue for a short time, and over the long haul, the community will benefit greatly from the new construction. The enterprise zones now are set by statute to a given number. This bill would increase the availability of enterprise zones to up to five new additional zones. It's a good bill. I encourage you to pass it. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Brown. Go ahead. State your name.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm Chris Chandler DeTorres. I'm the head of the Central Coast Economic Development Alliance, which has its office in Depot Bay. My county has one enterprise zone currently. It's a very large triangle that includes the cities of Waldport, Toledo, and Depot Bay, and Newport, and has an unincorporated area called Eddyville that has an industrial park. Because we are so far away from an interstate highway, have rail only running east-west into the county, only serving one of seven cities in our county, and natural gas that only serves half the county, we need any small assistance we can get that will help us in our quest to recruit primary jobs to the county. The Enterprise Zone program helps us do just that. In the roughly 3 years that Lincoln County has had an enterprise zone, two companies have accessed these property tax exemptions, and a third is pending. So you can see that enterprise zones aren't a quick fix or a boondoggle. One of the companies in my county that has been assisted by our enterprise zone is Quality Woodworking, a specialty wood products company that manufactures high-end cabinets, entertainment centers, tables, and such. Our enterprise zone helped us recruit Quality Woodworking to Waldport, a community in desperate need of jobs, particularly jobs that pay as well as Quality Woodworking does. Quality Woodworking not only qualified for an initial 3-year property tax exemption, it also qualified for an additional 2 years exemption. The cost of doing business in rural areas is frequently high. Quality Woodworking has 5 employees, and yet the value of its building and equipment is almost $400,000. As you can tell, it's a small company that certainly needed a bit of a boost, like its enterprise zone property tax exemption, in order to remain profitable and to stay financially viable. A second company at the Waldport Industrial Park, Northwest Machine and Manufacturing, which makes parts for such companies as Boeing and Bombardier, has built a new 10,000-square-foot building under the enterprise zone. Interestingly, Waldport has an unusual deficit for an industrial park. It does not have sewer service. Instead, company owners have to store waste in tanks that are pumped monthly, just another added cost of doing business in a very rural area. Waldport has about 2,000 residents. An enterprise zone doesn't make up for the deficits of manufacturing in a rural area, but it can help. Having seen the small but clear success of our county's existing enterprise zone, the north portion of my county wanted an enterprise zone as well. Lincoln City, Siletz, and Depot Bay passed the needed resolutions, collaborated on an application, and met the needed criterion, which are stiff, but unfortunately not enough zones were available. Clatsop County, Turner, North Lincoln County, and Stanfield Umatilla were all disappointed. Why add 5 new enterprise zones? I think it's the right thing to do. The program works. It gives needy rural communities something that helps them compete against communities in urban areas when bringing companies into our area or helping existing companies grow. In the current economic picture, anything that can be done to spur job growth is badly needed. The enterprise zone system is a proven method to help. Some may argue that enterprise zones take revenue away from taxing entities located inside a zone. My response is, how can you lose revenue you didn't have in the first place? As I've outlined, enterprise zones spur the creation of new assets which go on the property tax rolls within 3 to 5 years. Under Measure 50, the only simple way to increase property tax revenue is new development. Enterprise zones draw new development, new investment, and new jobs. Many ports in Oregon have property in enterprise zones or are an enterprise zone sponsor. When my county applied for its existing enterprise zone, letters were sent out to nearly 40 taxing districts and received not a single response. Frankly, many special taxing districts aren't impacted by enterprise zones if they don't have industrial or commercial property in their district. Others may argue that there needs to be a prevailing wage requirement for construction for projects receiving an enterprise zone tax exemption. I don't think there's a solid way to establish what a building trade prevailing wage is in a rural area. And further, most construction companies pay excellent wages in rural areas. Why add just one more government regulation that can hamper new job creation? As I think we're all aware, doing business in rural areas is expensive and it isn't easy. Please give some of the state's neediest communities who are actively working to improve their economies a tool that they need to grow new jobs. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions for our panel? Representative March.
Thank you. Chris or Alan, this would create 5 new ones, and my assumption is there's no guarantee that one of those will be include Depot Bay unless you've received assurances otherwise.
Correct. We would have to compete with everyone else.
Representative March, or Chairman Smith, Representative March, you're absolutely right. We have no guarantee, but we have no chance unless we do increase those numbers.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Representative Hass.
Thank you. Representative Brown, nobody would argue with the intent of what we're trying to do and develop our economy statewide and in particular rural areas. But my concern is when you add more enterprise zones, don't you effectively dilute the existing rural enterprise zones that are designed to target, you know, other places in Oregon that are having these very same problems? And then pretty soon you have the entire state is one big enterprise zone. You've lost the incentive for anybody to go to a rural enterprise zone.
Chair Smith, Representative Hass, I think that each area is somewhat different than the other area. The industry that we're going to have in Lincoln County is probably not exactly the same type of industry that you might have in Burns or Ontario. And these enterprise zones can be crafted somewhat different as to what they allow within those areas. And so ours would be crafted to support possibly some other industries other than tourist industry, because we have a very strong tourist industry, but we need other types of enterprise there, and so we'd build it around that.
Are there no enterprise zones on the coast?
Chair Smith, Representative Hass, yes, there is enterprise zones. There's enterprise zones now in Lincoln County. In the southern part of the county, there is. In the Lincoln City area, there is not. And the one in the southern part of the county is not crafted in a way to accept what the people in Lincoln City area was hoping to accomplish.
Well, Madam Chair, I understand that. I just guess that, you know, down the road there could be a reason, for example, where somebody who might want to locate in one of those enterprise zones in southern Lincoln County might do so in your new zone in Depot Bay. I mean, and then people in those jobs would be lost in southern Lincoln County. See what I'm saying? That pretty soon you're diluting the existing enterprise zones that are there. That's all I'm saying. I'm not arguing with the intent. I just,
yeah.
You know, I
think, well, what cheers. Chair Smith, Representative Hass, we'd hope it would be strong enough we'd create jobs in both of them,
sure,
all
right.
Kinds of them.
Well, we would hope it would be strong enough that we wouldn't need to do this at all and create these kinds of jobs. So that's only what might be concerned.
Thank you. Representative March?
Yeah. Can existing enterprise zone areas be changed? I mean, you've got one in Lincoln County. Could the boundaries be changed at this point?
Chair Smith and Representative Marsh, the answer is yes to a point. Right now, the boundaries for the existing zone are 30 miles apart, and that's really what the rules currently say they can be, is 30 miles apart. So this would be sort of really bending the rules to expand the current zone. The current zone also allows a property tax exemption for new hotel and motel growth, and Lincoln City certainly doesn't want to incent more new hotels or motels because they've got over 2,000 rooms right now between hotels, motels, and bed and breakfasts. The most on the coast between Seattle and San Francisco, actually. Lincoln City's number one.
Any further questions? Representative Brown, do you have any comments on the Dash 1 amendments from the special districts, or have you seen them?
I have seen, Chair Smith, yes, I've seen them. And the people that are bringing the Dash 1 amendments forward, I told them that I would not, not oppose them, but I'm not here advocating for them either.
Okay, they're here to testify on it, so that's why I just wanted to ask. Thank you very much. Thank you. Christina Squires. Welcome.
Good afternoon, members of the committee. For the record, Hasina Squires here today on behalf of the Special Districts Association of Oregon. The Dash 1 amendment is, in fact, our amendment. Representative Brown was gracious enough to not oppose that amendment, and we're not going to oppose his bill as long as the Dash 1 amendment is adopted. The Dash 1 amendment would allow taxing districts listed in ORS 198, similar to what we've done in the vertical housing zone statute passed last legislative session, and as we contemplated in the strategic investment program in House Bill 2299, which has been sent out by your committee to the Revenue Committee, would allow the ORS 198 districts to opt out of the five new enterprise zones that are created. Not any of the existing zones, only the five new zones. So on a prospective basis, allowing those districts to opt out of those zones. And if that is not what this amendment does and the department disagrees, I'm happy to have that amendment revised to make sure that it does only apply prospectively to the five new zones. It was not our intent to include any of the existing, the ability to opt out of existing zones. We feel like what's done is done. And as I testified early in this committee when the session first started, we were only looking at prospective actions. The ability to opt out versus opting into those zones, as you heard from the Lincoln County Economic Development Coordinator, the special districts that were notified under the creation of the Lincoln County Enterprise Zone, there were 40 notifications sent out and not one comment was received. So we decided instead of having opting into the zone, we would just have the ability to opt out. So you would be, in fact, have your property taxes foregone if you did not choose to opt out of the zone that way. Majority of the districts, as has proven with the vertical housing zone legislation, have chosen not to opt out of those zones. All we're asking for is the same ability as cities and counties to be able to choose whether or not our taxes are preempted by the creation of the zone.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Hasina? Seeing none.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else here who wants to testify on House Bill 2296? Would you like to come forward? Don't have you signed up, but that's okay.
Trains and such.
Trains. Oh, sure.
My name is John Pascone, and I'm president of the Albany Millersburg Economic Development Corporation. I'd first like to say that I support this bill. I've been an enterprise zone manager for about 7 years, and I would like to say, Representative Haas, that we could use all the enterprise zones we can. If the whole state was a zone, I don't think we'd be losing anything. It's not them or us. It's what can we do to incentivize businesses to invest here and create jobs. Through Representative Close, I propose an amendment to do a little fix to the enterprise zone. So I'd like to explain to you a little bit what our dilemma is.
That would be fine. We have not seen those amendments yet.
You were supposed to have, and I apologize.
So if you could explain.
Can I explain a little history?
Sure.
Okay. There's a company in Albany called Pacific Cast Technologies that pre-certified in our enterprise zone about 2 years ago. They were estimating that they were going to invest about $9 million. Actually, they've invested about $11 million in our zone. Their construction was completed in 2002, and therefore by April 1st of this year, regulations require them to complete an application for exemption by April 1st. And what happened with the economy was dropping, 9/11, and that subsequent economy dropped. This company pre-certified at 240 people. They were going to add at least 22 people. Actually, their investment was going to double their capacity. So as of April 1st, though, with the recession, they're down to about 220 people. Right now, they are adding people, but the zone regulations say that if a company doesn't make their pre-certified number in the first year of exemption, that they're not eligible for any of the zone exemptions. And this company had qualified for the extended abatement, which would have been 5 years. So because their numbers dropped due to no fault of their own, they can't meet the numbers first year. They can't come back for any other years, whereas if a company makes the first year, loses the second year, they could come back for a subsequent year. So I think it's really punitive to have companies make their investment in good faith, then the economy turn upside down, and they're out of the enterprise zone, in this case, for 5 years. So I think that we're asking that the director of the department be able to waive that first-year requirement so that the company could be given the opportunity to make their employment number in subsequent years. Rather than lose the whole 3 or 5 years of the exemption, give them the ability to come back and try to make the numbers. If they don't make the employment numbers in the year that they make their application, they don't get the tax exemption from that year. But if they can come back in a subsequent year, I feel they should be allowed to do that.
Okay.
Any questions?
Any questions for Mr. Pascone? We have not gotten the amendments, but I'm sure...
I apologize for that. It was drafted Friday, and they're working on it this morning, and so I apologize for that. It really is a case where if the economy is growing and the company makes their investment and they put the people on like they think, the situation's never come up, but all of a sudden there's a reception, their numbers drop, and they can't make first-year numbers, so they're locked out of 5 years of exemption.
Okay.
So it really is a punitive measure.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks very much.
We'll get back to you when we get the amendment if we have any questions.
They're on their way.
They're on their way. Could Mr. Burton come up maybe and explain or answer some questions maybe for the committee on the enterprise zone and the effectiveness of it, I think, is what Representative Hunt's wanting to know.
Yeah, just in general, I appreciate just kind of your perspective on the bill in particular, but also on the effectiveness of these zones in terms of, I mean, I think we all understand what the intent is. I'd just be interested in your perspective on what the success has been to date and then what you see as the potential success of adding these up to five more.
Sheriff Smith, Representative Hunt, we in fact brought a report that details the effectiveness of the zones over the last tax year, so we can pass that out. Recently completed, it's a sterling document. Yes. I believe that the Enterprise Zone program is a very effective business recruitment program. I think that there is an upside with very little downside. The downside is that you forego taxes that on new investment for a period of 3 years, maybe four or five, depending on if it's a company that pays exceptionally well. And in my experience, this is a useful incentive. The issues are very much on the table. There are communities that don't have zones that want them, and there's the issue about how narrowly focused do we want the incentive to be. If we look at Oregon as a whole, I would generally subscribe to Mr. Pascone's statement that the more the better. If we're competing against Idaho, Washington, and California, Nevada, then to the extent that we can incent someone to locate a business in Oregon, that's a good thing. And to that end, it makes sense to have a more open approach. There is the issue about whether or not we want to focus these in the places that are hardest or most badly hurt. And to that end, to have a few of them very strategically placed would be an upside. So this is a policy question that is why you guys are on that side of the dais. We have had lengthy, in terms of the Dash 1 amendments, we had lengthy discussions with the special districts, cities and counties, and understand their issue. That this is a tough time fiscally for jurisdictions throughout Oregon. Measure 47 created an opportunity to expand revenues for taxing entities. This program delays that increase. And for districts that are basically were break-even propositions that saw revenues declined with the advent of Measure 47, there's an imperative that leads them to propose that if they need to badly enough, they should be able to choose to be out of the program. Balancing that is an economic development concern, a department concern, that it gets complicated if you have... Lincoln County would be a great example. You would have two zones in Lincoln County. One of them would exempt all property taxes. The other one may or may not, depending on if somebody opts out. So depending on where the facility was to be located, depending on which taxing districts were involved in that, which zone it was in, there might be a difference. If a business, somebody was looking at the county in general and making a decision between a number of sites, I think it would be difficult from an economic development perspective to explain why Lincoln City doesn't exempt all taxes and Newport does. But, again, it's a policy question that's for you to weigh. I think this is why you guys are here. And I'd be happy to answer other questions. I don't know if I adequately did that. We believe it's a good program. We believe it works. I'd like to see it continue.
Representative Pat.
Thank you. I do notice, and you've heard, just not to pick on Representative Brown on this bill, but Valley and Midcoast, number chart 5 and chart 6 shows that it is doing relatively well, according to your information, when you look at the number of enterprise zones and current projects. And if you look at chart 6, the number of new full-time year-round jobs, I mean, there's been some success there. And again, what worries me about this bill is when you add more sites into those same areas, then what you're doing is taking away the strategic advantage of anybody who wants to market with those existing sites, because it's not as special as it was now that there are 5 more. It's just that simple. And I mean, I can leave it with that. Your charts seem to back up some of that.
Chair Smith, Representative Haas, I would point out that that premise underlies the very existence of the program. That to qualify, a community has to be relatively bad off. There are some eligibility criteria, and to get there, a community has to be demonstrating distress relative to the rest of the state. So built in, there is a selective criteria. Given that we now have 50 enterprise zones, potentially adding 5 more, how focused is that incentive?
Any other questions for Mr. Burton? Thank you very much. Oh, Representative March.
Thank you. I'm sorry. I didn't have my hand up soon enough.
Yeah, I can't see that far.
I see we have, in some instances, we have more than one in a county, for example, Josephine County. Is that the only where we have multiples? I just was looking really close, quick.
No. Sheriff Smith, Representative March. Josephine County is an anomaly. One of the provisions in the law is if there's one of a few federal statuses. In this case, Josephine County outside of Grants Pass is an enterprise community. And so the law says that if this federal status exists, then it shall also be an enterprise zone. So Josephine County is really unique in that regard, and that except for Grants Pass, the whole county is an enterprise zone. There are other counties with more than one enterprise zone in them. I would point you to Umatilla County, where there are 3 zones, and as Ms. De Torres testified, Stansfield Echo was an applicant for yet a 4th zone. That was part of our decision to award the zone in a different direction. We had 4 zones in the last round, 8 applicants, and the fact that there were already 3 zones there and you could amend the boundaries of a zone to incorporate Stansfield Echo led us to believe that we should spend the 4 last zones remaining someplace else.
follow up?
Yes.
Are there any counties that don't have zones now?
Chair Smith, Representative March, there are. I can't tell you off the top of my head which ones they are, but there are counties that don't have zones.
Would it be, I don't know, sort of appropriate to give them a priority in the next selection if we pass this legislation? Or how do you go about picking the applicants?
Chair Smith, Representative March, we first, they have to meet the threshold criteria. They have to be experiencing some level of distress, otherwise they don't even get in the door. Secondly, we look at a number of rating criteria. Most importantly, what's the prospects of creating an economic development activity as a result of awarding the zone? So how close are we to seeing actual development take place if we create a zone? As I suggested in the case of Umatilla County and actually a consideration in Lincoln County, we did factor in that they could amend an adjacent zone. And I believe Stansfield Echo is now part of the Umatilla, Confederate Tribe of Umatilla Indian Reservation Zone. Additionally, the Lincoln County situation is being addressed in part by House Bill 2299, which allows for the separate election within a zone for the hotel-motel issue. That was specifically the issue that precluded Lincoln City from joining the Newport, the rest of the Lincoln County zone, because Lincoln City did not want to incent motel development, so they didn't want to enter a zone where motel development was exempted. We're taking that is the reason we've taken it. We proposed in House Bill 2299 to allow for different determinations across the zone. Once those determinations are made, they become fixed for the zone. But Lincoln City could not exempt hotel motels. Newport could, under the new law, that would be permitted.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? I think that's it. Thank you very much. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2296. And since we have amendments, we'll probably be bringing this back. We've done some more study. Okay, we'll open a House Bill, a public hearing on House Bill 2302. Kim, do you want to explain to us?
Sure. Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2302 does a couple of different things. It creates and funds the Oregon Employer Workforce Training Fund. And depending on whether the bill moves forward in its original form or whether it moves forward with the Dash 2 amendments, it becomes a very different bill, the way it's administered and funded. So I think I'll defer to the presenters to explain the rest of it.
Okay. Thank you, Kim. Do I want to call him first? Jess? Karen, do you want to come up? I understand he has to leave. Do you have to leave to go back? Do you want to come first then? That would be great. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, appreciate your time very, very much. First and foremost, I want you to know that I'm here.
State your name.
Oh, I'm sorry. Jesus Jess Carrion, President of Portland Community College.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm here to provide testimony regarding HB 2302 and amendments. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I am Jess Carrion, President of Portland Community College, and I'm pleased to be here today to speak in support of the amendments to HB 2302. Most important is that community colleges should be identified as the prime and preferred provider of workforce training in this state. We are public, we are affordable, we have a long and successful track record of success with training. We are established and we are ready to step up to the plate for the citizens, businesses, and communities we serve. Oregon's 17 community colleges are the primary providers of workforce training across the state and have had many years of experience working with local business, industry, and other partners to respond to local needs. Portland Community College has almost 30 years of history in this arena, and annually we work with as many as 200 local companies to educate and train the workforce. We have contracts this year with TriMet, City of Portland, Intel, where we supply ESL instruction worldwide, Providence, Legacy, OHSU, 12 local nurseries, the Semiconductor Consortium, Raytheon, and many other small and medium-sized businesses and healthcare providers. Portland Community College plays an important role in educating and training the existing workforce, retraining people and who have been laid off, and in preparing the workforce for the future. We manage a customized workforce training department, which is able to design specific training programs to meet company needs at the worksite or at the college. We have worked closely with Freightliner, Boeing, Epson, Janssen, and other companies who have downsized to get their employees retrained and employed in other areas and arenas. PCC is a part of the federal one-stop system. Employment and training services set up under one roof to provide convenient and responsive services for job seekers and employers. The Small Business Development Center last year provided training for 2,700 people who run small business in the metro area. And the college offers more than 60 career and professional technical programs leading to degrees or certificates and or jobs. The bill you will help, the bill before you will help the colleges with these workforce training strategies by providing us with additional resources to respond to industry needs. It will consolidate the dollars flowing from the state and federal resources into one strategic place and provide for more coordination through the Governor's Office of Education and Workforce Policy, the Workforce Investment Board, and the Office of Community and Workforce Development. It is essential that the colleges be given maximum flexibility to make these training and workforce partnerships successful at the local level. The needs vary greatly across the state, and a statewide or forced model for delivering workforce training simply will not be effective. Moreover, the community colleges and the Community College Commissioner's Office have been working closely together over the past 3 years to develop a coordinated statewide plan for workforce training. This bill will fit well in with the work we have done to date and will give us a good framework for moving ahead. Thank you for your support of HB 2302, and I will be glad to respond to any questions. But before that, let me veer off from this just slightly, Madam Chair, if you don't mind. Yeah. I also represent the American Association of Community Colleges as the chair for 2003-2004, which is over 1,100 community colleges in this country. My theme for this year is economic and workforce development. I've been involved with this for nearly 30 years, so I'm not an amateur. I'm not a Johnny-come-lately to this issue, and it's crucial, critical, that community colleges in this state be considered the primary providers. Everyone basically wants to get a piece of the action, and I understand that. But the community colleges are public. We can't hide, and we've been doing this for many, many years. You have a system that's already set up. We're here. We're local, we're regional, and we can cover the entire state. But moreover, we have hardcore experience at doing the kind of things that are going to be needed. And we have the contacts with small, medium, large businesses, with government, with community organizations. We are an arm of the state government to be able to do the kinds of things you need to do. And I think that's a real crucial, important. You talk about interagency cooperation. The community colleges are ready, willing, and able to step up to the plate. And I've got some colleagues who are just as eager as I am to make sure that we're a part of the solution to Oregon's economic future. And that's really, really important. And we're not into the yada yada of the you know, we're gonna do all these great things for you. The dollars will go and be focused at preparing people to be retrained or get into the workforce as quickly as possible, and or gain a certificate, and or get an AA degree in a professional technical area. The bottom line is we create wealth by putting people back to work. It's a very simple concept, and the community colleges do it better than anybody else that I know of. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Well said. Any questions?
And I kind of sort of have a feeling for this.
I do. You did it very well.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Berger.
I hate to come in after because that was extremely well said. Thank you, Dr. Curran. I just want to be real clear that your testimony is in support of the Dash 2 amendments to this particular
yes, ma'am.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, ma'am. And it should say that specifically. On
yeah, it does say, and I just wanted to make sure.
No, yes, ma'am, it is.
Because there's some confusion as to the two bills. Mm.
Thank you for that clarification.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, for... Thank you, I sure will.
Matt Hughesley and Tim Nesbitt, want to come up together?
Have a seat.
Is it Hughesy?
Hennessy.
I'm sorry. I can't read, so I apologize. I often say with a name like Smith, it's easy to, you know.
You must not have read the weekend's paper either.
I was busy farming. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
For the record, you get to say it right.
Absolutely. Okay. You want me to say it? Oh, you want me to say it,
yes,
right?
Yes, I do.
I see. Madam Chair,
members of the committee. My name is Matt Hennessy, H-E-N-N-E-S-S-E-E, and it's great to be with you this afternoon to spend some time talking about some of the issues regarding workforce training and development. It's a joy, actually, to be here today as we think about this very important issue for our state. There are several of us that are going to be speaking with you. I am the co-chair of the Workforce Training and Development Task Force. I apologize for my voice because I'm a preacher also, and yesterday must have been a great day at church. That's all I can tell you. But I'm going to represent my comments today, having spent time as a business person on this task force, along with Judy Brandis from AOI and also Tom Sass from Gunderson in Portland. My colleague Tim Nesbitt represents labor on this committee, and he'll speak for some of the labor issues here and also speak to the people who were part of the task force representing labor. We were also blessed, Madam Chair, members of the committee, with a connection to economic development. Jess McKinley represented the Office of Community and Economic Development on this task force as well. What I'd like to do is to give you some our ideas, to give you some broad thoughts about where we are today, and then as each of our presenters come up, we'll drill down further into the task at hand, if that's okay with you. Yeah. First of all, I want you to know that the governor asked Mr. Nesbitt and I to lead this task force on workforce development and training as members of the transition team. And our charge really was to say, how is it that we might be able to provide, recognizing the importance of job training and the importance of flexibility to business, so that there are funds that already come to the state, how we might be able to use them differently than we already do. Not to say that we would want to disrupt all of the things that are going on in workforce training and development already, but to say how we might be able to provide opportunities for a strategic trust fund to make sure that we've got the ability to have flexibility and responsiveness to support the needs of business around our state, and also to make sure that we're providing workforce training dollars that can get to workers and to the employers as quickly as possible. And so part of the reason why we're here today is to seek your support as we talk about the concepts of this bill and have it implement its recommendations that came out of the workforce, rather the governor's task force. So, in House Bill 2302, what we're looking to do is to create a strategic training fund. We felt that our purpose was really to come together to talk about some of the things that are going well in workforce training and development already, but also to talk about what are some of the things that we could do differently and to make this process even better as we think about the importance of adding the economic development content to it, or the connection between workforce and economic development, and also continue to expound with, I think has been eloquently said by the president of the community colleges in our state, to make sure that we're also connecting community college to it as well. So, the task force is recommending a workforce agenda that creates a flexible and responsive and timely system that anticipates the economic needs of communities and meets the rapidly changing needs of business and labor, and to support statewide economic development. Also, that we address skill gaps in labor shortages and the ongoing retraining of workers in ways that are responsive to business and industry needs, allowing the state to retain and grow competitive companies, which we think is extremely important. And also that the state be able to use available workforce funds in a more flexible and creative way than it's currently in practice. And in this area in particular, there have been for some time people mentioning that they wanted to have more flexibility for the governor, more flexibility in workforce training funds and things of that nature. It's our feeling that it's not just about the ability to talk about it, but we really want to do something about it, particularly at a time that we know that we're grappling with so many issues in front at our state right now. We've heard many things, and in fact, I've taken the time, and members of our committee have taken time to talk to a number of people around the state, a number of stakeholders from the business community, from the labor community, from community colleges, from the economic development arena, and from many of the boards, as a matter of fact, who are doing workforce training and responsible for that in the various regional areas and local areas around our state. And what we've heard from many of them is that they really would like to see a lot more responsiveness, a lot more ability to do some creative things to bring business and labor together, particularly when there are some real needs. The other thing we certainly learned in this process is that there are a number of programs that the state already offers that we need to do a much better job making sure that businesses know about them. So our goal today is really to, on the one hand, be applauding the people who are doing great work already, but also seeking to get an opportunity to have far more responsiveness and flexibility as we think of our opportunities for workforce development and economic development in the future. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Mr. Nesbitt.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Tim Nesbitt, president of the AFL-CIO in Oregon, and I was pleased to co-chair the task force on workforce development for the governor, and was joined by my colleagues Diane Lovell from AFSCME and Wally Marins from the Portland Area Building Trades Council. Just to echo some of what Matt said, and I'll try not to be redundant, I think a primary conclusion we drew from our review of the programs is that they haven't been well enough focused on the state's economic development strategy, and that connection, again, is key, as Mr. Hennessy has emphasized. We found a lot of good work being done, but also done in isolation, often not well coordinated, often done in piecemeal fashion. So the thrust of the recommendations in our report, as well as key parts of the -2 amendments, are to allow this work to be done with a more coherent strategy that's linked to economic development needs and responsive to business and worker needs. We have three specific recommendations in the report before you, and I understand you have copies of that report as well as the bill. Not everything in the report is necessarily reflected in the bill or in -2 amendments. But in particular, that linkage of economic and workforce development in Salem and between Salem and the rest of the state, and coordination among the regions is going to be a central thrust of the new policy, so that we have a single coherent statewide policy. Secondly, to streamline and coordinate the workforce system to give businesses and workers one point of contact through regional worker response teams. And I can call your attention to page 9 of the bound report, which outlines the function and the representation on the regional core teams, which to some extent were modeled on the success here in the Salem area with SEDCOR. I would want to call your attention to one other fact. It's not in the bill, but you see here a recommendation for a similar team at the state level to enhance coordination. It was not intended to be so specific as to say that me or my office would be the one represented, the president of the Oregon AFL-CIO. It's supposed to say a representative of labor. The last draft I had seen said that, so someone was being either trying to draft me or being kind to me to add that language, but that's not really the intent. We just need some representative of statewide labor. Thirdly, and I think this is what is most critical in its connection between our report and what's in the bill, is to have a strategic training fund that would be made available, the funds from which we made available to business, industries, and worker associations for training to upgrade skills and also prevent layoffs where possible. And you'll see in the draft, in the -2 amendments on page 2, lines 18 on, there is created the Oregon Employer Workforce Training Fund. It's one way to think of it as a bigger pot beyond what's currently accumulated and spent with federal funds. And one where some creative and entrepreneurial fundraising would allow us to help get to a point identified in report of $10 million in the next biennium to support these efforts. And that's a level which we think wouldn't by any means put us in the big leagues of workforce development programs compared to other states our size, but would certainly make us more competitive and give us the ability to, again, not only strengthen workforce training, but coordinate it better with economic development strategies. More to come from subsequent presenters in terms of detailing the overall proposal in the bill, I'll end my testimony at that point and be available for questions. Thank you.
Any questions for our panel? Representative Gallegos.
Yeah. Thank you for your testimony today. Page 2 in Section 3, where it does kind of outline the training fund that, and it's to be separate from the general fund, but it is to receive money from the Department of Community Colleges, which does receive money from, what monies from the community colleges would go into this separate fund?
We actually have a representative, Madam Chair, Representative Gallegos, who will speak to that from the community colleges. I think the next
group. Margaret, Ken, are you next?
Next after the next group.
We'll react.
Yes.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I briefly just want to commend you and your task force, especially, I mean, this kind of report often might come after a whole interim of work. I assume since this came out of the transition team, which wasn't established until mid-November, that I just want to commend you for coming quickly. That seems often to be one of the problems around this building, is things stretching on interminably, and I think it's great you all come up with specific recommendations with a specific charge. I just want to clarify for my own sake, based on one thing that was said earlier, although there is a base bill, nobody at this point is really coming forward in support of the base bill. The whole issue, it's really a
dash two.
I hate the term gotten stuff, but there's only one real bill on the table, correct? We're only looking at the dash twos, and the base bill was really just a placeholder.
Yes, and Madam Chair and Representative Hunt, by the way, I think we were the longest running act on the transition team. Most of them finished their work at the end of January, but the whole point was to have this bill as a placeholder to which we could add the recommendations of the transition team, and that's what's coming to you in the Dash 2 amendments.
Yes, Representative Berger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You may not be, because there's a whole team of folks coming behind you, and so you may not be the ones to answer this question, but I am just by nature suspicious whenever new task force are suggested, that we're not just adding bureaucracy and taking away from your stated goals of flexibility and responsiveness. You understand my sort of sense of this. There's two recommended here, and I just want to be sure that task force doesn't mean more people talking and less people doing.
I personally, Chairperson Smith and to Representative Berger, appreciate the comment. And truly, to speak to Representative Hunt's comments about how long we got our work done, we actually worked every other Thursday from January to March. That's how this committee got together, focused on getting its work done. Everyone made a commitment to come. No one missed a meeting, and our goal was to do exactly what you said, not to add to bureaucracy, but to be true to the ability for us to create the kind of flexibility that we're seeking as it relates to the comments that are going to be made, that we've made, and that you'll hear made later on. And at the end of the day, I suspect that you'll still be the judge who will decide whether or not that's really what it says, but I can assure you that our goal has been not to create more bureaucracy.
Thank you.
Maybe to clarify that question, this doesn't actually create a new task force. It uses the existing workforce, education and workforce policy committee that's already in place.
That's right.
Thanks.
And Madam Chair and Representative Berger, in March, I think you may be referring to page 9 of the report.
Yes.
We as a task force, we're done. But you can see that the recommendations include a way to have more flexible work groups, which are, you know, groups that get things done, not groups that meet and deliberate, in terms of better service delivery, both at the regional level and at the state level. And that's what you see on page 9 of the report.
Yeah, that's
great. The report. Okay. Not the legislation.
Yeah, okay. Any further questions? Well, thank you, Mr. Hannes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Julie Brandis and Eric Johnson.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Eric Johnson. I am with the State Workforce Investment Board. I'm not here on behalf of the board. I'm here speaking on behalf of myself. But I wanted to express my strong support for the bill. I think it is absolutely critical for the board and to achieve its mission. It is consistent with the goals and strategies that we have established. And I just want to speak on behalf of the measure and wanted to express to you at least my own personal commitment to make sure that this particular program is implemented prudently. Thank you.
Welcome. Madam Chair and members of the committee, for the record, I'm Julie Brandis, representing Associated Oregon Industries. We participated on the governor's task force that created the study before you. Associated Oregon Industries does have a somewhat long history in working on workforce issues. We started in 1996, which isn't as long as some of the groups here, but as our members began to voice their concern about their abilities to train workforce, especially in time of need, when maybe the economy was changing or technology was changing and something needed to be done quickly. During the task force, one of the things that sometimes an association representative has to do is explain to a relatively cohesive and friendly group where we won't go and what we won't accept. For example, we would not accept a diversion from a new diversion from the unemployment trust fund. That was something we made clear. That wasn't really an intention of the group. But I think what came from the group was the strong desire from all parties to find something that worked because the situation was somewhat concerning. The second thing we did was look at all the money that Associated Oregon Industries spent much of our time doing, is looking at the money that was coming into the state for a variety of workforce training programs. It produced something that isn't here today, but we called it the scary chart because there is a certain amount of funds that come into the state from federal dollars. They go into what are called these silos. We kind of looked at that and said, well, you know, are we going to create more bureaucracy? Are we going to create something that actually produces more problems than good? And what came from that discussion was absolutely not, that one of the things that we really lack in the state is flexibility, the ability to quickly tap into money when it is needed, because those federal monies do flow to specific problems and programs, pardon me, and there isn't a lot of flexibility. And the third thing we did that somewhat confirmed that is we surveyed our membership. And this isn't something we do all the time on every issue, but on the issue of workforce, we did survey the human resource managers in our state's companies. And what came back to me was absolutely surprising. Many of them, it didn't matter on their size of the company, what types of services or products the companies produced. There was no key variable that would determine if a company knew what value the state had in workforce training programs. Some of them knew, some of them didn't. Sometimes we had different responses from within the same company because a survey would get forwarded. And what we really determined is that there needed to be sort of a more streamlined approach in the state that, again, employers could quickly tap into and receive the assistance that they might quickly need. And that is why we're here today in support of this bill and the proposal in front of you. We did not, I don't think we did so lightly. I think we took a long, hard look at it and put it up against the challenges that we often do when looking at a new program for the state.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative March.
Madam Chair, so are you telling me that AOI and AFL-CIO are agreeing with the community colleges on this bill?
Well, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, yes, I'm telling you that. And
thank
it
you.
Wouldn't be the first time this session, so we are trying to put aside differences when we can and work together as often as we can.
Glad to hear it.
Thank you. Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you. Margaret Halleck and Cam, are they together? Cam Brias Brawley. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you, Chair, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Margaret Halleck, and I'm the governor's policy advisor on workforce, revenue, labor, and some other issues. And I want to, first of all, thank the people that have gone before us that gave the intent of the task force, worked very hard as a task force, charged by Governor Kulongoski to help develop a new, coherent, strategic approach to workforce development in the state. When he appointed me as advisor for workforce issues, I then became a partner and staff to the task force. And we've worked very hard to try to get this to you before it was too late this session, and looked at the work that had been done in the last administration and by the previous workforce advisor. And the results of all of that analysis is in front of, part of that work is in front of you today in House Bill 2302. I want to emphasize, though, that this is not going to be the entire agenda for workforce development in the new administration. We do understand that there are some issues about the effective performance of the other elements of the system, of aligning interests and providing more leadership at the state level for the regional workforce systems that are currently in place. But what we found is that the state hasn't developed a leadership role, and what is missing in the workforce development arena is the ability for employers and to have access to flexible funds for upgrading the current workforce. You know, that's what is missing in a strategic approach in this state, that when the money goes to the local areas, they're unable to use it for that reason, for those reasons. They end up providing other kinds of services to unemployed workers and dislocated workers. But what we call a demand-driven employer and industry and labor-supported strategic fund was one of the key gaps that we view in the current workforce system. So our proposal is to use funds that currently come to the state, as well as other administrative funds, and to create a strategic and flexible funding source. Many of you have asked about how this will work. We have the ability now to bring together some of the federal funds that flow to the state and have it in the strategic reserve, and then redirect that to the regional and local areas where it will be available to them for job creation, job retention, training related to those two aspects of economic activity. Our idea is, instead of adding another task force or board at the local level, that we're modeling this on the Salem, with what's called in the local area the Workforce Integrated Network Teams, which were created by the Salem Economic Development Corporation in conjunction with Temecula Community College, the local employment department, and the local workforce board. And they create a very flexible team that's a first response team to businesses. So if business comes looking for land or economic development assistance or recruiting or job training, that it's this team that comes into being and solves those problems and then disappears and comes into being again when the next program when the next problem arises. So it's those kinds of teams that we want, flexible teams of people that already work in economic and workforce development at the local level to interact with us without creating a whole new entity. We want them to work with their local workforce boards, but make sure that we have workforce and economic development at the table, because that's not occurring in every part of our state right now. We have these parallel tracks. Workforce training, education and training is sometimes occurring without the solid analysis of where is the economy going, what are the growing industries, what are expanding, what are their workforce needs, and how do we link these up. That's our task, and this is a small step, but an important and absolutely critical step in our view for achieving that. So we will, as a policy advisor and in conjunction with the Community College Department, establish the fund that will be available to these teams at the regional level. We hope that they also have access to the lottery, customized training funds, and their own funds that they can broker. Community colleges are brilliant at brokering funds for industries. And so what we want is for them to bring all of these resources to the table, and this will be one aspect of their work. I don't want to repeat what's been said before, and I want to give a chance for Cam to also speak with you. So I'll end my testimony with that and accept questions maybe after Cam talks a bit about the administration of the fund.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. For the record, Cam Preuss-Brawley, Commissioner of the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. I have 3 points that I would like to make and add my support for this bill. We do believe that the fund is necessary. There are more training needs that exist in Oregon today than there are resources to match. And the resources that will be combined into this fund, because they will be held at the state, they will be more flexible. I know it doesn't make sense necessarily, but the way in which the federal workforce dollars come to the state, probably the most rigorous dollars are those that go to the local level, and the state really holds on to the more flexible pot. I also want to let you know that the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development does have a track record for administering this kind of program. This would be 2002 is the third year we have set aside $2 million each year of federal workforce dollars at the state level for current workforce training. That's for training the people who are currently in the job, but they actually need additional skill enhancement in order to stay productive and for the company to stay competitive. That $2 million, because of the way in which we devised the program initially, is done twice a year. It's a rather onerous request for proposal process that unless your company meets our timeline, they really can't access the money. So we are more than ready and willing to cast aside our rather bureaucratic approach for the one that is laid out in this bill, because we do believe that, one, local teams will be able to access a much more flexible set of resources. And the last point I want to make is another very important feature in this bill is the public-private partnership. There is not enough money for the public sector to fund workforce training. There just isn't. The private industry funds something like 100 times what we are able to afford. I wish I had the figures with me. It's astounding. But that investment is critical, and what we want to be able to do is catalyze the investment that employers are going to make. The bill does require a match. We think that's important. We need to have business at the table because the public sector dollar is so lean, but we need to have something on the table so that employers know that Oregon is ready to do business and meet their training needs. So I'll stop there and be happy to take questions.
Thank you very much. Any questions, Representative Berger?
Madam Chair, now that I know that it's modeled after the Salem. Now I understand what you're doing. And you're certainly not building a new bureaucracy, I'm convinced. No, I do know the Salem model, and it is quite responsive and isn't. And I appreciate your reference to it. Talk just a little bit about the funding, the new money, old money, reconfiguring money, how this kind of puzzle of the funding fits together for this sort of different model of how we're approaching.
Madam Chair, Representative Berger, we believe that, and first of all, let me just say that Oregon is not even on the radar screen compared to other states with this kind of a program. The $2 million a year that has been applied to job retention, job recruitment, training upgrades is dwarfed by Washington, by California, by Idaho. They started a long time ago and have found other sources of funding besides the federal money. We think that as a first step, we should at least direct more of the federal funds that come to the state for this program. So instead of $2 million, we would like to use $5 million a year of the federal funds that come. We have worked with the Employment Department, who is a partner in this, and have an agreement to use some of their administrative funds for this purpose, which previously had gone for other purposes, including the Debbie Lincoln can speak to this further about what the shift of those funds would mean for her department. We've worked with AOI to talk about using the unspent monies that have been collected for the Jobs Plus fund that are if you keep that program at its current level, there is estimated to be $4 million of unspent funds. Those are the initial monies that we are seeking to redirect to this fund. And then we hope to be able to get more federal grants, other kinds of foundation, other funds that in the future may be available. So the key is to create the vehicle that we can then, if we're successful too, I think we'll have, you know, the ability to enhance and enlarge this from other sources. So it's really redirecting some funds that have previously gone for workforce, plus adding two other. I mean, all of these funds have gone for workforce, I guess, workforce development. So it's just redirecting those to a more flexible and demand, what we call business and labor-driven process.
That might have answered it. Okay. Any further questions?
Yeah, I'm wondering if you can address that question that I had earlier with respect to the community colleges, their funds, and I think it's getting clear that it's some of the federal money that they get.
Right.
But early on, community colleges came around, of course, because they're underfunded, need more money. Is this going to create a bigger problem for them and therefore a greater need on more general fund dollars to backfill perhaps some holes that were created?
Madam Chair, Representative Gallegos, I don't believe so, if I understand the question. Because these resources are federal workforce dollars, community colleges have had access to the $2 million we have set aside for the past several years. And in order to receive that money, there had to be a public training partner, and it was most often a community college as well as a private business partner. And it is not anticipated at this time that any of the community college support fund would be added to this pot. It will be separate.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Any other questions? Well, thank you very much. Is there anybody else here who wants to testify on House Bill 2302?
Madam Chair, I have a question. Oh, because I've highlighted something.
One further question.
Indulge me here, and it's on page one. Well, starts on page one, section two, item four, offering assistance to new and existing businesses. That last line, to reduce the needs for public assistance. And just could you clarify what we're talking about here? What we're trying to get folks off of public assistance by virtue of training, or just doesn't really put.
Madam Chair, Representative Gallegos, the idea is that these are sort of the intent statements, and we believe that training is one way to enhance wages and have family wage jobs so that people are not looking to the state for support. So to the extent that education and training is associated with higher levels of income, we want to support that move towards higher levels of education and training. That's the intent of that statement.
Follow-up, Madam Chair?
Yes.
And then up in subsection 2, encouraging quality economic development by providing incentives for existing businesses. What are those incentives that are going to be offered?
We hope that, Madam Chair, Representative Gagos, we hope that this fund actually is available for businesses that are expanding, and that where they may not have had access to training resources, that this will provide that avenue. The way that we actually this hopefully will be played out is that we want to very much work with industry and clusters and trade associations so that we can develop a systemic approach to education and training needs for those industries. It's work in food processing. It's working in healthcare. We believe it can be work in a number of industries. And that if we can help provide the seed for that, the development of the curriculum, of bringing people together to talk about workforce needs, providing the analysis, and the training itself is what we're talking about in terms of those incentives. It's not helping them deliver and helping deliver to them upgrades in skill enhancements for their workforce.
Thank you. No further questions this time for sure. Thank you.
I want to thank the committee for
your time.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. Is there anyone else here who wants to testify on House Bill 2302? If not, I'll close a public hearing on House Bill 2302, and I'll open a work session on House Bill 2302.
Madam Chair.
Representative Mark.
I would move the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2302.
Thank you. I have a motion to move Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2302. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Representative March? Representative Berger? Oh, they're splitting it up. Okay.
We were fighting over it.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
What's a chair to know?
I would move House Bill 2302 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Representative Berger. I have a motion to move House Bill 2302 as amended with a due pass recommendation to Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Representative March?
Aye.
Representative Richardson?
Aye.
Representative Hass?
Aye.
Representative Hunt?
Aye.
Representative Gallegos?
Aye.
Representative Berger?
Aye.
Chair Smith?
Aye. So ordered. Thank you very much. Without that, I'll close the committee on Trade and Economic Development Committee. Thank you very much, committee.
Plus, it's a little more.
Yeah, no kidding.